Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. It's the start of the new year, and we're going to give you some inspiration in the form of stupid investor tricks, things that investors did last year and the year before that really made no sense, and the lessons you can learn today on the Real Estate Guys radio program.
If you love real estate and have always wanted to own your own business, listen up. The Real Estate Guys and their panel of experts want to teach you how to go full-time fast in the real estate syndication business. These next few years may go down in history as one of the best times ever to acquire investment real estate. There are deals everywhere if you know where to look and how to assemble the resources. The Secrets of Successful Syndication Seminar will show you how to make big money doing big deals from a team of experts that have syndicated projects totaling more than $1 billion. Don't wait for someone to give you a raise or create a job for you. Attend the Secrets of Successful Syndication and learn how to build a team, raise capital, find deals, and make full-time money in 6 months or less. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events. All the big players use syndication as a way to diversify risk, optimize profits, and earn big money. You can too. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events.
Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio show. I'm your host, Robert Helms. Happy New Year. Let's meet the guys, our financial strategist, co-host Russell Gray.
Hey, Robert.
And back with us after a bit of a hiatus, the godfather of real estate. He's been investing in seven different decades, Bob Helms.
And great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, it's the start of the new year, and we had our podcast last week about a new year and a new plan. Lots of great feedback from the listeners on that. And it is. It's a brand new year. We're excited about it. In fact, we're sailing in to our annual goal retreat, so our minds are full of all kinds of things we can do right in the new year. And to get grounded, we thought this week we talk about some things that people did way, way, way wrong.
Well, you know, one of the things at this point of the year that we're doing is we're looking back. We're looking back as we get ready to go into the goals retreat and have that evening reception, the reflection reception, where we look back on last year and we ask ourselves, you know, how did it go? What did you learn? What went right? What went wrong? And so this Stupid Investor Trick Show is a very practical, tactical real estate show about some of the things that we've seen and read about and perhaps even done ourselves that haven't been all that bright. And hopefully you will take lessons from that going forward and be able to apply them to your own investing and your goals for the upcoming new year and have a fabulously successful investing adventure.
We say that experience is the thing that allows you to recognize a mistake when you make it again. And so we're all guilty of having challenges and making mistakes and doing things wrong. But hopefully, as human beings, we learn from those mistakes. A few weeks ago, we did a newsletter about a couple of landlords that kind of blew it. And maybe read the newsletter. The headline was, "Slumlords Admit to Terrorizing Tenants to Drive Them Out." This happened in Brooklyn, New York. And as you know, you'll see from many of these stories, when a situation in a market presents itself, there are sometimes enterprising entrepreneurs who look for workarounds. When you have rent control and you can't raise the rent until a tenant moves out, maybe you look for a way to encourage your tenants to leave.
Yeah, at the very core of it is this concept of when life hands you a given, you have a choice about how you are going to react to it. And this idea of doing a workaround is that you've been handed an obstacle and you're like, okay, I got to figure out a way to work around this to make this work. Rent control is one of those obstacles. You know, a lot of investors, including us, choose not to invest in areas that have rent control because it creates a perverse incentive to not maintain the property. There's no point in investing in the property or even maintaining the property at a high level if I'm not able to charge a higher rent for delivering a better product. It kind of dumbs the product down. And so either you make the decision to get out of the space and go someplace where it makes better sense, or you do what these two bozos did, and you try to find a way to incentivize or entice your turnover. You know, normally as a landlord, the last thing you want is turnover, but in rent control, you actually want turnover in a hot market because you have the ability to push people out and raise the rent.
And if they're not moving on their own, what do? You run loud dogs through the hallways. You literally bring drug dealers in to the building to hang out. I mean, these guys were banging on walls. They were destroying part of their building in an effort to drive these tenants out.
Well, ironically, that's the perfect example of something that was done purposefully. I think most of the stupid mistakes we make aren't things that we plan to go out and see how much trouble we could cause for everybody else and ourselves. Ironically, with rent control, the big argument for rent control is that there are unscrupulous landlords who cause the poor downtrodden tenant to be in trouble. Well, guess what? There are sometimes.
Right. Well, and this is interesting, right? Every October we do a show called Halloween Horror Stories. And those are typically things that happen to investors where something went wrong and we look for the lesson we got. And to your point, Bob, those are normally things that couldn't be foreseen. They're things that happen. Most of our stupid investor tricks today are things that happened on purpose. The most salient point is you don't want to be one of these guys or gals. You don't want to be someone who resorts to these kinds of tactics. And there's a ton of lessons. So think about this. You've got a building and your occupancy is good, but your rents aren't high. And you see that as an opportunity. A lot of times when we look for an apartment building for sale, and we've been in the apartment space a long time, we look for an apartment building where there's upside to the rent, meaning that what's currently being charged by the existing owner is not at market, which means there might be an opportunity to come in and raise the rent. Now, that's easy to say, but as we know, you can't just come in, raise the rent, and expect everyone to pay more and stay. That often doesn't happen. So we look for an opportunity where there is some upside. But in order to get that upside, in fact, we were just having a conversation about this with an investor this week, you've got to do something to the units. This particular couple is buying a large apartment building and they've got a big rehab budget and they're trying to decide how much to spend. How much do we spend per door on our rehab? Well, the answer is that depends on what that investment will do to your income. You've got to do some research in the market to say, if I spent $5,000 a door, I could get this much more in rent. But if I spent $12,000 a door, I could get this much more in rent. And if you can figure that out, and there's some clever ways to figure that out, then you make a business decision. As Russ would say, do the math, and the math would tell you what to do.
Well, and it's not just spending the money. It's how you spend the money.
Yeah.
It's being strategic. It's trying to figure out, you know, they do these analyses all the time. They say, oh, well, if you know, where do you get the highest return on investment when you fix up your house? It's kind of the same principle. You know, like my pet peeve is plumbing. I hate plumbing. You don't get any extra credit for having good plumbing. And so if you make an investment in the infrastructure of the building in the form of plumbing, you really don't get any more rent for it. People expect the plumbing to work. But, you know, in the long term, it's a good investment because bad plumbing can create all kinds of damage that is very costly to repair. But in the short term, that is not a, I'll put in new plumbing and upgrade the rent. So if I've got to spend money in infrastructure, so when you're-
Well, before you leave that, I think that's a stupid investor trick. If I'm holding long term, I'm going to spend extra money in the plumbing, not because I'll get more rent, because it won't be a pain for the next 5, 10, 20 years. Guys that go in and rehab and flip houses often will put less into things like plumbing because they're going to sell and be gone. But this is not for you if you're a buy and hold landlord. The saving of the money today is nowhere near as important as having a product that works for your tenants so they continue to pay in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of examples of that. It can be little things like caulking. And one of the famous hoteliers was asked a question, you know, what was like one of the secrets to profitability? And he said, shower curtains. I could cut corners on shower curtains, that but it was, would cost me a lot of floors.
That was Conrad Hilton. He was on The Tonight Show, and Johnny Carson asked him, what one thing would you have to say to the, you know, the audience? And he says, please put the shower curtain inside the tub when you take a shower. That was his one thing to tell everybody, because if the shower curtain's out and the water gets in the, right? So it is little things that make the difference. So that's our stupid investor trick number one is these. And again, that the headline said slumlord. We're not going to assume, right, or label. It's just that's a dumb thing to do, is to try to get your tenants to move in a way that isn't upfront. Could you go to a tenant and say, hey, we'd like to rehab the unit and make it nicer, and we could come to an agreement, even though we have rent control, we could do nothing, or we could come to an agreement, hey, we'll spend a little money if you'll agree to pay more rent. Or you might offer them a cash payment to leave early. And there's a lot of things you could do with the same intent without going down the path of bringing drug dealers into the building.
Be sure to check with your real estate attorney and be very familiar with the landlord-tenant law in your particular jurisdiction.
Absolutely. All right. Well, before we leave this idea of the tenants and the getting them out or getting them in, Bob, you know, when you buy an apartment building, you often find this thing that happens where there are particular tenants in the units that aren't really long-term tenants and maybe never paid rent. Can you speak to that?
Let's take a simple look at how it works. The whole idea is to increase our revenues when we're an apartment building owner. How do we do that? Ideally, we raise the rents. If you're in rent control, then there are often limitations on it. And this is where you want to look carefully if you're thinking about getting into a property that has those limitations to begin with. It isn't necessary. It might make great sense, but it may not. The game is, when I'm trying to sell the property, how does that property want to look for me to get the best price? It wants to be fully occupied. It wants to be at the highest rents we can justify, because the price is a direct reflection of the income the building produces.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how income property is valued, by the income it produces. The more income, the more value. It's not just the building and how many units and how many doors and all that. I'm buying, when I buy an apartment building, a stream of income.
Well, you can see the dynamic here with somebody who's trying to sell a property and they don't have full occupancy. They're going to be perhaps a little less judicious about the tenants they take. If you can fog a mirror, as Rush used to say when you were doing the old loans, that's good enough. That'll work just fine. I might not even charge you the full deposit that I would charge everybody else, etc. So you can build up what looks like a perfectly full property, but the tenants in there are not people you're going to want for long.
So this is not a suggestion. This is be aware when you're buying. It's happened to us several times. We know three people in the last 3 months that have closed in apartment buildings with, 85 to 95% occupancy and discovered in the first couple of months deadbeat tenants. And a little more investigation, we discovered on a building we bought, more than 150 units, that there were 25 tenants in there that had been moved in the 45 days before we closed escrow, not a single which ever paid any rent. And they showed up on the rent roll. So the lesson is, that's a stupid investor trick. The stupidity lands when the buyer doesn't do the homework, doesn't use rent rolls, doesn't verify, doesn't use estoppels. Now, if you're assuming, hey, I'm going to chase all the tenants out anyway, hopefully not in an illegal manner, but we're going to move tenants out. And a lot of places where there's not rent controls, 30 days notice and they're out. I can give 30 days notice, just like they can give me 30 days notice. You can get a tenant out of your property in many places, just not in rent control places, perhaps. And a quick aside, not all rent control is awful rent control. Some rent control you can live with. We were in a market for a long time where the rent control said we could raise the rent up to 8% a year. Okay, well, if you look at markets, there's not too many markets where the rent goes up 8% a year, but they put that in so that in a big, robust housing boom, you couldn't have 25% rent increases, and that was probably prudent. But in some of the places where there's rent control, like in New York, where you can't raise the rent at all or under very few circumstances, it creates this opportunity for people like these guys to figure out other ways to get out. But imagine you give notice and you can get folks out, then slowly you work your way through the building and increase the units in terms of what you do to make them nicer, and that increases the rent. And this is just a process, but it's very, very common, buyers of apartment buildings, that you'll find that the current rent roll isn't what you're going to be relying on. What you want to rely on is the fact that there are potential tenants in the marketplace if your current tenants leave.
Well, I think the important thing when you're doing the due diligence going into one of those types of deals for someone who's on the buy side of that is just understanding that almost everybody in the transaction has a short-term view. The loan broker, having been in that business, they've got to get the rent rolls. They've got to document the file. They've got to get the loan originated. They collect their fee. The real estate agent has got to get the deal closed, and then he collects his commission. The seller wants to get the deal closed so he can get his net proceeds and move on. The person left holding the bag is going to be you and possibly your property manager. That's somebody who you can enlist at the beginning. Hey, if I get this property, it's going to be your property. Or maybe, and you have to be careful when you're talking to somebody else's employee when you're in a deal. That's a different matter. But the point is that there's most of the people who are involved in the transaction, who are auditing the files, who are building the paperwork, all have a short-term mentality except you. So keep that in mind when you're taking advice and listening to their guidance as they're coaching you through the transaction. If you're a seller and you're thinking about doing this, here's the danger. If you fall out of contract and you've put a bunch of garbage in your property and now you've got another 120 days, now you're the owner and it's your problem. And if they're not paying and if they're trashing, then you've got eviction and turnover. And it's just, usually in business, it just isn't smart to have a short-term view. And just think about your reputation as a seller. I mean, why go there? So to me, it's stupid to do anything that is going to damage your long-term reputation, that is going to do anything that could come back and bite you when for just a little bit more effort, you could do the right thing.
You mentioned property managers, Russ. That's a great source of getting the information you want to get and verifying that it's correct. You come in and somebody says, the rents are, and here's what we're getting. You need to know whether those are the market rents or 20% above the market rents, and that's being represented. Who can tell you? Who can you depend on? The property managers in the area know every rule. They know all the regulations. They also know what's real. In fact, if you're a buyer, one of your great sources, maybe through your broker, is to make sure the property managers guide you in terms of what the real inventory wants to look like.
Well, this is another important concept, and Robert, you probably may want to comment on this as well, but if you're looking at those rent rolls, you go, oh, every unit's rented for $1,200 a month, except you got 3 months free when you moved in,
right?
And so what is that person on a one-year lease? What is their real rent? And there's just tricks that people do to kind of just game the file to make the value come in and the loan come in. And again, you're the person who's going to be left holding the thing in the long term. So you just need to know, to your point earlier, Robert, if you know you're going to go ahead and turn the property over, maybe you don't care that much. But that doesn't mean that you need to be naive to what's really there. You've got to understand what's really there when you're doing your projections, your pro forma, and your due diligence.
We're talking about stupid investor tricks, things that people do with maybe good intention that don't turn out so well. And we're going to make sure that we're aware not to do those things whenever possible. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Live nationwide, you're listening to The Real Estate Guys. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com.
If you've been listening to The Real Estate Guys for a while, then you've heard about the legendary Investor Summit. Simply put, it's the highest level event we do, and the content, faculty, and attendees are amazing. If you're serious about taking your real estate investment to the next level, consider joining us. You'll spend an entire week with like-minded investors, world-class educators, and real-world professionals, and you'll have a blast. It all begins April 1st, 2017 in Houston, Texas. Some alumni have already booked 60% of the cabins, but public registration is now open. Visit realestateguysradio.com and click on the tab that says Summit to learn more. We spend 2 days on land learning and networking, then jump aboard a luxury cruise ship for 6 more days of classes, roundtable discussions, great dinner conversations, and a ton of fun. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click Summit and make plans to spend a week with the Real Estate Guys and an all-star faculty on the 15th Annual Investor Summit at Sea.
Hi, this is Patrick Donahoe of Paradigm Life. Wall Street and banks spend billions of dollars per year in advertising with the goal to convince you that they are the solution. But take a look around. None of their advice has worked. The number one concern of all Americans is still money. So are you ready for another way? I've spent the last 10 years teaching people like you a superior way to build wealth and financial independence outside of Wall Street. I've developed a free e-learning program called Infinite 101, where you can learn about the perpetual wealth strategy. In this free program, you'll learn how to build your wealth without a 401k, IRA, or mutual funds. You'll also learn how to establish private financing without ever having to walk into a bank again. These are just two of the many ways this free program can propel you toward financial independence. Simply go to paradigmlife.net and click on the register button on the top right corner of the page to gain instant access.
Hello, this is Robert Kiyosaki. I'm the author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And if you're serious about learning how to invest in real estate, listen to The Real Estate Guys. They really know what they're talking about.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show. If you've ever wanted to do bigger deals and make bigger money, then come on out to The Secrets of Successful Syndication, March 3rd and 4th in Dallas, Texas. All the details on our website at realestateguysradio.com under events. We're talking about stupid investor tricks, some headlines of some things that landlords and other investors have done that don't make too much sense, but you can see why. We want to make sure that you're aware of these things. And our next topic is sensitive because people lost their lives. You probably heard about the warehouse fire in Oakland, California. And it's a bigger issue than just a building burning down. What's happened in a lot of high rent marketplaces is that creative folks have figured out a way to find lesser accommodations for less money. So this was a warehouse, and it was designed to be a warehouse, a place to hold boxes, store equipment, to conduct business. And it was leased by the owner to a single tenant. And that tenant went and made individual living spaces and artist spaces. And so in what should be a business building are a bunch of people living. And it doesn't have code, and it doesn't have the right plumbing, and it doesn't have the right electricity and all those things. And it was kind of an artist's community where they did events and they had music and they had all these, you know, interesting things throughout the warehouse, all these old pianos and lots of cords draped everywhere. And unfortunately, during an event when a lot of people were there, there was a fire and people couldn't get out because the exits weren't marked, because there weren't two exits out of every sleeping area. All the things that we put into the codes and so forth to keep people safe weren't there. And so that was a serious problem. And again, I don't want to make light of it because people lost their lives. I'm quite confident there are 3 or 4 or 100 other buildings just like this throughout high rent marketplaces that could be next. And so this is an interesting perspective from the landlord, because the landlord just rented it to a person. That one person, for all they knew, well, they had a business. They were going to store stuff there. And it was the tenant who then went around and brought people in and had a couple of RVs parked in there where people were staying, tents set up where people were staying. Definitely not legal, definitely not compliant, and definitely not safe.
Well, at the end of the day, as the owner of the property, you have a high degree of responsibility to know what's going on in your property.
Yes, you do.
And so even though you rented it to a single tenant, the stupid trick is not to go inspect your property every once in a while. Send somebody by to take a look at what's going on. Be aware of what's going on and what is okay and what is not okay. And then if you're going to give in and say, hey, it's a good tenant, I'm getting paid on time and no harm, no foul, and then something like this happens, I mean, not just the legal liability, just from your conscience sake, how do you live with that? And, you know, I'm sure nobody involved in this planned on it. Nobody even probably even thought it was possible. I mean, it's one of the dangers. It's why so many people fail to carry adequate insurance. It's why so many people fail to have fire escape plans and things. They just, nobody wants to think about what could go wrong. Estate planning. I mean, there's so many things that people don't do to take into account the possibility of a disaster. And then when the disaster occurs, now you've got a big, big problem. And, you know, I'm the first guy that just really doesn't like a lot of regulations. I really am not fond of it, but my bigger issue is big federal one size fits all regulations. I really do like things to be very local. So when you've got local building codes, when people are aware of the local risks, the wind, the dryness, the chances of fire, flood, whatever the unique thing is, hail, there's unique weather patterns.
Hail, yes.
Seismic issues. I mean, there's definitely things that get built into the code that are local. Those things are there for a reason. I have no problem with them. And I think that it's stupid not to take the time to understand what those codes are, to operate your property according to the code, and again, to make sure you're going by and just inspecting and not just putting the thing on autopilot and hoping everything is going to be okay.
You know, in both of these cases, with the slumlords in Brooklyn and with the Oakland fire, in both cases, they were trying to solve a problem that was a market problem. Right? The rent was kept too low in Brooklyn, so we want to get our people out and we can't do it the right way, so we have to do it another way. The rent is too high in the Bay Area, and so to create a place for people to live who can't afford those rents, we come up with a different use for a property, right? So the creative part is interesting, but there's creative ways to do it. Think about lofts. A loft apartment, and there's lots of these in New York, in Oakland, in other places. And we go on our Dallas field trip. We look at a great project that used to be a big warehouse. The Sears and Roebuck catalog building that was built in the 1900s is today more than 1,100 lofts. Well, when you take the creative idea of what could I do with this old building and turn it into housing and that's going to make me money, you have to take the next step, which is I'm going to redo the plumbing. I'm going to get professionals in there. I'm going to make sure I live up to building codes. All those things have to happen. And now those can be thriving investments.
Well, think of it this way. When you're going to be creative, it's like coloring. And when you're coloring, there's lines. And if you want to color inside the lines, you get a better looking picture. If you just want to scribble all over the paper and ignore the lines, you get a big mess. And that's what we're talking about. This is, you know, immature or irresponsible people that are just coloring all over the place being creative. We don't want to quench the creativity. The creativity is great. That's how new products, new services, and maybe the creativity needs to push the code back a little bit. Some of these things were written a long time ago,
right,
and they're no longer relevant. They're not meeting the needs of the community, but there are paths, there are processes, there are procedures to get there. Just encourage you, when you're in a business where you are providing housing, lodging, a place for somebody to conduct business, and you have responsibilities as the owner operator of that property, you need to color inside the lines.
I think when you bend the rules to come up with a solution, there are oftentimes fallout. There's things you never thought about. For example, the landlord who rented this to a single tenant, I'm sure he had insurance, but there's a good likelihood when they changed the use, that insurance claim would be denied.
You bet. That's exactly right. And so as the landlord, you just can't throw up your hands and say, it's not my responsibility. I rented it to some dude. It is your responsibility. If you have a drug dealer who's dealing drugs in your apartment, that is your problem and it will manifest. Is it your job to police what every tenant does for a living? No, but could a reasonable landlord figured this out? This place was doing events. They were posting on social media. They had flyers about live performances where they charged money. That is not the use. That was the approved use. That's probably not what the lease said. And you're right, Bob. I'm confident that insurance is not going to cover when the use is not exactly what the policy was written for. So again, our hearts go out to the people who lost their lives. And I hope that's a strong enough message for all of us to say, let's color within the lines. Let's do it right. Let's not be stupid investors. We've got more of the tricks, though, coming up, and we're going to play real estate trivia next. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Need help with your real estate investment portfolio? Check out the resources page at realestateguysradio.com.
Are you ready to profit in paradise? Hi, it's Robert Helms, and if you think real estate investing means tenants, toilets, and termites, think again. Located just a short plane ride from the U.S., a virtually untouched paradise awaits, the beautiful country of Belize. When you go to Belize with the Real Estate Guys, you'll spend four fabulous days discovering one of the most intriguing real estate markets I've ever seen. With its jungle rainforests, pristine beaches, and 81-degree turquoise water, Belize is one of the most beautiful places on Earth. Plus, it's considered one of the top seven tax havens in the world. Belize property is on the rise, and many experts think the best is yet to come. But don't just take my word for it. Come experience Belize firsthand at our upcoming investor field trip. When you join us, you'll discover the many reasons we love Belize, like tremendously undervalued beachfront land, super low taxes, ease of doing business, and so much more. Get the details at realestateguysradio.com. Just click on events. See paradise for yourself. Click events at realestateguysradio.com, and I'll see you in beautiful Belize.
Hey, this is Phil Collin of Def Leppard and Delta Deep, and I'm with the Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Guys radio program, heard every weekend on this great radio station, all the time at realestateguysradio.com. This week, we're talking about stupid investor tricks, things that landlords do that don't make a lot of sense, and in the long run, probably cost them a lot of heartache and money. Before we get back to some of those, it's time to play real estate trivia. This is your chance to win a prize by knowing today's real estate trivia question. When you hear it and think you know the answer, send off an email to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. Include your name, the answer to the question, and your physical mailing address so that if you're the winner, we can send you a copy of Second Chance, the latest book by Robert Kiyosaki. It's a big old book, and you're going to dig it. That can be yours if you know today's real estate trivia question. Last week, it was the last show of the year, a new plan for a new year, setting your real estate goals, and we asked this: what do Malta, Sri Lanka, Israel, Saudi Arabia, Fiji, and the Cayman Islands have in common from a real estate perspective? Well, none of those places have property tax. Here's our real estate trivia question for this week. What's the single most commonly used construction material in the world? Of everything that buildings and houses and everything's built out of, think about all the materials in your house, in your office building, a movie theater, whatever it is, what do you think is the single most commonly used construction material? There's a lot of them. There's one that's number one. As soon as you think you know what that is, send us an email to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. Put your name and your mailing address. If you're the winner, we'll send you Second Chance by Robert Kiyosaki. That's today's real estate trivia question. We're here with Russell Gray and the godfather of real estate, Bob Helms, talking about stupid investor tricks. And I think one of the investor tricks we see people do is they are penny wise and pound foolish. They try to save money. No problem with that. But to your point earlier, Russ, when you're talking about it's not just the money you spend, it's how do you spend it. People do things like saving money by not getting inspections before they buy. Or they save money by using a discount broker who doesn't really know the neighborhood. So let's talk about the mistakes we see people make where they're thinking they're being prudent, but what they're really doing is probably throwing away either profit or potential.
Well, I mean, when the stakes are high, and real estate transactions are typically high stakes, big dollars, there's a lot of money at stake and a lot of responsibilities we just discussed. So if you really don't know what you're buying, if you shortcut on the process of doing your inspections, your due diligence, and it's expensive. And if the due diligence says the deal is a no-go, now you've thrown that money away. But have you really? I mean, when you buy insurance and you don't use it, is that a bad thing? When you pay for insurance and don't have a problem, that's a good thing.
It is one of the products that you buy that you hope you never use, just like a fire extinguisher.
Exactly. So if you think about your due diligence expenses as insurance, and if you have to use it, meaning you spent it because the deal was bad and it saved you from a bad deal, that was a good investment.
Yes. Good point. You know, one of our Halloween horror stories years and years ago was about a guy who was actually a real estate agent, and he was helping investors to buy properties, and he came across a really amazing fourplex deal, and he thought, hey, I think I'll grab this one for myself. Love that. Everything about that story. I know Bob loves that because Bob's belief is that most realtors aren't going to think about buying the property they sell. Real estate. They don't own any real estate. Well, this is a guy who bought a great property, but because he was so smart, he didn't need to get an inspection. He looks at property all the time. So not only did he not get a property inspection, he didn't get any other type of inspection, roof, foundation, any of that. Bought the property, closed escrow. The market was strong as can be, so he went to resell the property in a very short period of time, about 6 months. And he was standing to make a very nice bump, an increase, because, one, the market had gone up, and two, he'd done some things, painted a little bit, right, got the rent up a little bit. So the new buyer comes in, and this buyer's a little more prudent. They get a home inspection, and the home inspector says, there's some things, few things, but the biggest thing is I think you probably should get a foundation inspection from a separate licensed professional. Ironically, he then followed it with, but you might actually want to save the money and not hire a foundation inspector, because after I've looked at the property, I've discovered that this property has no foundation. It has no foundation. How's that possible? This was a wooden building built right in the dirt. No foundation at all.
We call that a mud sill.
It's a mud sill, absolutely. And so I'm guessing if he had spent a little money up front the first time, he might have averted a terrible problem. Of course, he finally was able to sell that at a tremendous loss, that building. So, you know, ounce of prevention is what inspections are.
Well, there's a maxim here that's worth getting, and it's this. The most successful investors are the most educated investors. Obviously, the real estate guys are all about education and reminding you, but you don't want to learn these things one knuckle blow to your nose at a time, but you can if you insist on it. And Russ's point is certainly good. Insurance makes good sense. We like to say you're going to pay for these lessons, so you want to make sure you get the lesson. You just don't want to pay too dearly.
Oh, well, hopefully, and we can live vicariously, right? We can learn some great lessons from other people's pain. You definitely learn it better when it's your own pain.
You know, one of my kids' favorite things to do when they were little, especially my youngest, he used to like to watch YouTube, and he would just search for people getting hurt.
Nice.
And he would just watch all these videos of people just getting hurt. You know, remember America's Funniest Home Videos, and most of the ones that were the funniest, and there's this other show out there called Ridiculousness. It's the same thing. It's just these people doing these these amazingly stupid things and getting hurt. And so it's fun to laugh at it when it's not your pain. And so we do have a little bit of fun with it. But man, it's just amazing the things that people do or think they can do that just don't work out as planned. And so you really do have to be prudent, especially if you decide to go down the path of syndication, because now you're responsible for somebody else's money and you have a higher level of care. You may not think, oh, well, it's not my money if something happens. That's a horrible attitude to have, by the way. But you have, under the law, you have a high degree of responsibility. So it's really, really smart to make sure that you get professional help, that you do your checklists, that you follow your protocols. You know, it's like flying an airplane. You know, there's a way to do it right. Go down the list and do it. And don't look for the shortcut. Don't look for the easy. It's like lawyers, right? It's easy to be your own lawyer, your own legal agreement, write your own contract, create your own property management agreement. There's many, many examples where you are going to need the assistance of a lawyer and different types of lawyers in your real estate investing. But lawyers are expensive. But you don't save money by not using the lawyer. You save money by learning how to use the lawyer efficiently.
Yes.
You get a little bit of a basic education. You learn to speak the lingo. You get very organized. You go in, you get out, you get what you need. And then that's how you keep your legal bill down, not by hiring them.
Yeah, same thing when it comes to inspections. You can negotiate an inspection, but I think the way to get the most out of an inspection is to be there for it. Don't just get the report. Walk through with the guy. You can learn so much walking through. And you get the report and something's in there and it seems like it's a terrible thing. And then if you're in the building, well, the guy points it to you and says, see this? I'm a little concerned about this and here's why. And you go, oh, that's not that big of a deal. He goes, no, it's not. But in the report, he's got to make a big deal of it. If I'm there with them, so again, that takes a little more of my time, but ounce of prevention.
Well, you know, that brings up a different flip side of the stupid investor tricks, and that's majoring in the minors. Because when you do get those reports, if you're uneducated or inexperienced and you see something that looks alarming and you've listened to a show like this, you're like, oh, you stress out about every little thing. And you kill a very good deal over a minor point. So
I had a broker who had a great advice about that very thing. He taught the agents in our office that when you're sitting down with the buyer reviewing the inspection, and typically there's going to be all kinds of things, the inspector's going to call attention to anything they see that's wrong, and they get all upset because, well, one of the light plates is chipped. And they highlight it and they say, yeah, we're gonna ask the seller to take care of that. And he would train us to stop and say, well, let me ask you this. You have the right to ask the seller to take care of that. But if the seller for some reason says no, are you willing to walk away from the deal? Because if the seller says no, you don't have a deal. So is it important enough that you'll ask the seller to do it? And if they don't, you'll walk away? Or do you still want the deal and you'll pay the $1.29 for the switchplate? And every time that brings them to reality, right? They see all the problems. Listen, you're buying a used house. There are going to be little things. Now, if it's something major, like, I don't know, no foundation, well, then yeah, that's something major. So all kinds of things that we get into trouble with, we're trying to save money.
You have to look at what your own abilities are and your inclinations. If you think that you're a really good hands-on guy, that's terrific, or gal. That doesn't mean that your first expense should be for a ladder so you can become the inspector.
Right.
Hire people who do it for a living. It's inexpensive and they've got licenses that are involved and they're going to do a good job for you.
Now, Russ, you brought up something else, which I wanted to talk about, which kind of morphs into this. I've seen a lot of folks who aren't aware of tenant-landlord law and do things that are in defiance of it and maybe well-meaning. But your point, you get an attorney to check. I remember we had a student who got into his first apartment and he was very, very excited. It was a fourplex and he sent over his house rules. These are my rental rules. I have a rental agreement and these are my house rules and I've got a lot of great stuff in here. I read through it and it was brilliant. He'd really thought through what's going to happen during a tenancy and if what goes wrong and so forth. And so I wrote back and said, hey, great job. Except four of these points are illegal in the state you're buying the property in. So you can't do that. You can't ask the tenant to do that. How would he know? He wouldn't. How would I know? I owned a lot of property in that state. I was brought up as a property manager, on-site property manager. I knew tenant and landlord law down cold in that state, not in every state. So get the advice to make sure, just because it sounds like a good idea, doesn't mean you can do it.
Well, this is a danger in the internet age. We're so used to not having to read the manual. We just go to YouTube and look up how to do something. And it's a do-it-yourself world because, you know, all of this technical information is available. But, you know, again, this is a highly regulated industry. And so there are nuances you need to be aware of just like that. And so it was great that he did the research, great, looking for ideas. And it was great that he came and asked for advice from somebody who he deemed to be a mentor. And it was great advice. And, of course, you pointed him directly to an attorney because we don't give legal advice. And the thing that you have to understand when you go to work with these professional advisors, you know, is you talk about the inspectors and marking every little thing. You show somebody a contract or a legal agreement, they're going to mark every little thing. Your advisors all carry something called errors and omissions insurance, and they do not want to make a claim. So a lot of the advice they give you is designed not to protect you as much as it's designed to protect them. And there is a balance between understanding all of the risks you're exposed to and then the probability and the impact of it as a business decision. And so one of the other stupid investor tricks is listening to your attorneys and your advisors for business advice. They don't give you business advice. They give you technical knowledge so you can make a risk versus reward assessment and decide, is that risk that I'm facing? Is this $1.29 switch plate? Is this a risk that I'm willing to accept? And the broker that, you know, you were referring to, Robert, would convince the person or say, yes, I'm willing to accept that risk. Then great. Now you understand that. You know it's a problem. The inspector did his job. You're aware. But the business decision is, I'm willing to take that risk. And so a smart investor understands how to make those good trade-off decisions. A naive investor will rely upon all these people whose primary agenda is to protect themselves, and they will overprotect you. They will protect you right out of your deal, and you'll never make any money.
Now, I completely agree. Your attorney should give you legal advice, not business advice. The thing I'm going to take issue with is that sometimes attorneys do try to give you business advice. So it's not that they won't, it's that they shouldn't. So just ask yourself, is this person giving me advice that is in their wheelhouse? Or like every human being, did they see something? I mean, we see this all the time with attorneys. They start to go down a path and we stop them. Well, just stop right there. I'm not seeking business advice. Appreciate the input. Thank you. But I got my answer because that's a billable hour.
Right. And it's fine to listen to it. I mean, there's no problem listening to it. And in a lot of cases, or in at least some cases, if you have the right attorney, that's the value add. We had George Ross on the show and he talked all about the importance of having an attorney who understands your business and can give you business advice. So we're not necessarily saying you don't take business advice. What you have to understand is the difference.
Yeah.
One is legal advice. One is technical advice. You know, what are the facts? And then the business advice is, how am I going to react to the facts? And that's a judgment call. And so business advice is about making a good judgment call once you have the facts, the lay of the land. And so when you learn to discipline your mind to understand those two sides of it, now you can cut through all the chatter and figure out exactly what you're looking at and then what you decide you want to do and who you want to listen to.
To be a smart investor, you got to look at some stupidity sometimes. It's stupid investor tricks. We got a few more when we come back. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Real estate investment advice right in your mailbox. Sign up for the free Real Estate Guys newsletter at realestateguysradio.com.
If you want to retire in the next 5 years or less through real estate, then please pay close attention. My name is Brad Sumrock, and I've taught thousands of my students how to replace their incomes, quit their jobs, and retire faster than they ever thought possible by not investing in single-family homes. You see, there's a secret to retiring fast with little risk, and it has nothing to do with being a landlord, fixing toilets, or flipping houses. The secret is multifamily apartment buildings. Starting from scratch with zero experience, I managed to pocket over $1 million in cash and retire from my 17-year corporate job within 3 years of apartment investing. Now, this is not your typical no-money-down real estate training. We believe in smart, hard work for intelligent people. So if you're good with your finances, have a decent job, or saving your money, and you're looking for a change and getting out of the rat race, then investing in apartment buildings might just be the answer you've been looking for. Send an email right now to Sumrock at realestateguysradio.com to get the details of my upcoming training event. And you'll also receive my free training webinar, Apartment Investing for Beginners. That's Sumrock, S-U-M-R-O-K, at realestateguysradio.com.
Memphis is famous for being the home of the king of rock and roll, but it's also the king of cash flow. If you're looking for affordable cash flow properties, it's hard to beat Memphis. Get your portfolio rocking and more cash flowing your way by calling Terry Kerr at Mid-South Home Buyers. Terry's the king of turnkey properties. Contact Terry through the resource section at realestateguysradio.com. And be sure to order Terry's Tips for Turnkey Rental Property Investing Report. It's free. Just send your request to turnkey@realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Peter Schiff, and you are listening to The Real Estate Guys.
And welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. We're so glad you tuned into the show. Tell a friend about The Real Estate Guys. We're also excited about this year. Lots of great guests coming up, lots of cool topics. Today, we're talking about stupid investor tricks, and we run across stuff like this all the time. And really, the distinction between this show and our October show, Halloween Horror Stories, those are things that happen to investors that are bad, but they necessarily couldn't see them coming. Maybe sometimes. This is more about things where you're doing something and it's just not the right way to approach it. And so many times we look at a problem where we see only one answer. It's good to get around good folks. In fact, next week on the show, we're going to talk about how you assemble your tribe. Who do you get around? Getting around the right people is so important. So be sure to tune in next week. You know, one of the things I see investors do is they get educated and they think about stuff and they get a market or two that they like. And then they think about an investment strategy that makes sense. But often they mismatch a strategy and a market. Give an example. We had a student many years ago who really liked the idea of leverage, right? He came to one of our classes, rushed a class on managing a mortgage for maximum net worth and learning about the nuances of leverage. And there were all kinds of financial products available. And he thought, wow, if I could get the most leverage possible, the highest loan possible, I put as little money in as possible, then the money I have to invest, rather than buy one house with 40% down, I could buy five houses with 5% down, or whatever the numbers were back then. That's a great strategy. And then he went to a market with zero appreciation. Well, how's that a problem? Well, the problem is when I go to sell that property in a year or 5 years or 10 years, if it's not appreciated or appreciated 1 or 2 or 3% like many markets do, then where's my upside? I'm leveraged so much that I've got to pay the bank off primarily, and I have my sales cost of 8 to 10%. There was no out for that guy. The strategy wasn't wrong. The market wasn't bad. They didn't match.
Yeah. And the thing is, you've trapped yourself. It's the same thing when a market turns on you, like it did in 2008, and a lot of people were trapped in underwater properties they couldn't exit, except the market didn't do this to you. You did it to you.
Right.
And so markets that have good supply-demand fundamentals that are going to pressure prices upwards would be what we would call an appreciation or an equity market. Most of the time, people see that and they buy into those and they buy the future. And that's how you end up with low cash flow markets that typically tend to appreciate. And so if your investment philosophy is, hey, I'm willing to have break even cash flow for upside potential, great. But you got to make sure those market fundamentals are there. So everything you said, Robert, was spot on. And the key is just understanding the concept, the principles, and then how to do the analysis. It's not rocket science. It's not overly complicated. But if you don't even know what you don't know, then you don't seek out the education you need to be able to do the analysis and do the math.
Two important words, Russ, you just said, investment philosophy. Your example illustrates it perfectly. This person did not look at their exit strategy. If they had done that and simply said, how am I going to get out of this? When? What are the pieces? It would have been clear that didn't work. So the whole point I'm making is you want to always look at your exit strategy or strategies. And it may depend on the market. It may depend on several things. But if you don't look at it, it will be a guess. It will be a surprise, and it may not be one you like.
I'll give another example of mismatching a market and a strategy. Another investor who came to a market that we do field trips in and really fell in love with the market and said, I love this market. In fact, I love this market so much, I see myself retiring here in 15 years. And I also like the fact that there's great investment opportunity right now. It's a strong market with great performance, and I could buy something that would cash flow really well. So what I want to buy is I want to buy a house that will be my retirement house in 15 years. I want to rent it in the meantime, but I also want to vacation in it once a year, and I have 4 kids, so I need a lot of bedrooms. Well, what on earth makes you think that one property is going to solve those 3 very different issues? Just take the last two. I want a big house with lots of bedrooms. That probably means it's going to be 2 or 3 story in this market, and I'm going to retire there when I'm older. Well, maybe stairs don't make sense, right? What makes you think that today you can know what the you 15 years from now is going to want in a house? Who knows? Your lifestyle could be completely different. Your means could be completely different. So we got talking and said, you know, maybe what you focus on is the most immediate need. The cash flow. You can make a return. Buy a rental property. You don't have to ever stay there. If the returns are good, take some of that return you make. And when you want to stay for 2 weeks, stay at the most fabulous hotel you can find, right? So again, one property does not have to fit every need you have.
Well, I think the big lesson there, Robert, and in everything we've been talking about in this particular situation, is just the idea to bounce some ideas off somebody who is more experienced, who has some visibility. Sometimes you get too close to what you want. You know, you solve your own problem. You get circular thinking or incestuous thinking. You reinforce a bad idea. You talk yourself into it. And getting that reality check is really important. So, you know, one of the things that stupid investors do is they make decisions in a vacuum. They're not very well advised. They don't really talk things out. They don't necessarily even think things out. You know, they just kind of shoot from the hip. Whereas somebody that I would consider to be a pretty smart investor is somebody that is going to take the time to invest and build a network, build a mastermind group, have associations, have an advisory team, have people that when you're getting ready to make a financial decision, you can say, hey, let me just run this by you. Let me see what you think. Here's what I'm trying to accomplish. Always set the table with what you're trying to accomplish, not how you're going to accomplish it, but what you want the outcome to look like. If this thing on a scale of 1 to 10 was an absolute 10, it was perfect, it came out, everything came out right, what does that look like? You know, how much, by when, what is exactly does it look like? And then say, okay, so that's where I want to go. That's what I want success to look like. Now, here's what I'm thinking about doing to get there. What do you think? Do you think that would work? Here's what I have to work with. Maybe I have things that I could work with to get there quicker or do something maybe a little bit differently. So there's always more than one way to solve a problem or to skin a cat, as they say. Not why, I don't have any idea why anybody would ever want to skin a cat, but there's always more than one way to solve the problem, to approach the problem. And so getting creative people together, getting experienced, smart people together and bouncing ideas off of them before you pull the trigger. The problem is when you're in a deal and things are moving quickly, it's easy to shortcut. We've talked a lot on this episode about the mistake of being myopic and shortcutting. Getting good counsel is another area, and it doesn't have to be something you pay for. It could be where you're just in an exchange group where you exchange ideas, a mastermind group where you participate, everybody participates for free so they can share in the collective brain power of the group.
You know, we call that finding your tribe, and that's exactly what we're going to talk about next week on The Real Estate Guy. So hopefully you've got at least some inspiration of how not to behave, and make sure that you are being prudent when it comes to your investments. One of my favorite quotes from Brian Tracy is, the pain of low quality always outlasts the pleasure of low price. The pain of low quality always outlasts the pleasure of low price. If you cut some corners, if you didn't do the things you were supposed to, if you bought the cheapest one, if you're a long-term investor, that's going to come back to bite you. So think differently. Have an amazing 2017. We'll talk to you next week. Until then, go out and make some equity happen.
This episode of the Real Estate Guys Radio Show is brought to you by Paradigm Life, powerful cash management strategies using life insurance. Learn more at beyourbank.com. Mid-South Home Buyers, low-cost, turnkey cash flow properties in Memphis, Tennessee. Corporate Direct, asset protection strategies for real estate investors from attorney and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton. Find these and other great companies under the Resources tab at realestateguysradio.com. To learn how you can expose your product or service to the Real Estate Guys audience, call 888-489-7723, extension 4. That's 888-489-7723, extension 4. Or use the feedback page at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Real Estate Guys Radio Show.